It's the 19th of March, 2026, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader in Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman. Today, we're bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in the state of Arizona, news from the military news websites, as well as the websites and publications of our veteran service organizations and the Veterans Administration. Our first item, then, is from militarytimes.com. VA awarded authority to appoint legal guardians for impaired veterans. This is from the 18th of March by Patricia Keim. An agreement between the Justice Department and the Department of Veterans Affairs allows VA to put veterans under guardianship if they're unable to make their own health care decisions. A memorandum of understanding announced last week by the department gives VA attorneys the legal authority to enter into state court guardianships or conservatorship proceedings in cases where veterans don't have family or legal representation to determine medical treatment. VA officials say the process will help hundreds of veterans hospitalized at VA facilities who are unable to transition to more appropriate settings. A new partnership with the Justice Department reflects our ongoing commitment to ensuring that every veteran receives timely, appropriate care, even in complex cases, VA Secretary Doug Collins said in a release. VA officials said the agreement is aimed at helping roughly 700 veterans languishing in VA facilities, but the announcement, which noted that the agreement includes some veterans who are either homeless or at risk of homelessness, raised concerns among advocates that the authority could be applied to a larger population of veterans, such as those living on the streets. Carl Blake, CEO of Paralyzed Veterans of America, said court-ordered guardianships or conservatorships could result in a veteran's loss of rights or lead to unnecessary institutionalization. Blake asked how the VA previously met the needs of incapacitated veterans and whether they would have access to their own legal representation paid for by the VA, if necessary. Guardianship can severely or permanently restrict an individual's autonomy, civil liberties, and access to community-based supports, Blake said in a statement on March 13th. Veterans who have served our country deserve care that honors their dignity, preserves their rights, and supports their ability to live in the community with appropriate services. Under the program, VA attorneys can ask a state court to determine if a veteran needs a court-appointed guardian to represent the veteran's best interests to determine appropriate medical care, VA Press Secretary Pete Kasparowicz said in an email to Military Times. According to Kasparowicz, the decisions would be made with full due process and process rights for the veterans involved and continuous court supervision of the guardian, and the court, not the VA, would appoint the representative. Despite the VA's assurances, California Representative Mark Tacano, the ranking Democrat on the House Veterans Affairs Committee, said the agreement puts VA in a position where it's responsible for a veteran's well-being as well as the legal driver of stripping veterans of their rights. Guardianship should always be a last resort after all less restrictive options have been exhausted to ensure veterans' rights are protected. Veterans fought for our freedom and theirs. The federal government should not be engineering ways of taking it away, Tacano said in a statement on March 11th. Kasparowicz said the agreement is not an effort to institutionalize veterans against their will. Instead, he said, provides the VA an avenue for removing veterans already stuck in VA hospitals who could benefit from other settings. We're trying to get them in the most appropriate care setting for their needs, he said. Blake asked the VA and Justice Department to commit to transparency, allowing for public scrutiny and independent oversight to ensure that affected veterans do not lose their civil liberties. VA must carefully consider any broad use of guardianship as a care planning shortcut and adopt policies with robust safeguards, Blake said. And that's VA awarded authority to appoint legal guardians for impaired veterans. Our next item. Judge orders VA to reinstate contract with employee union. It's also by Patricia Keim from the 16th of March. A federal judge issued a preliminary injunction Friday that temporarily reinstates a collective bargaining agreement between the Department of Veterans Affairs and its largest employee union. Rhode Island U.S. District Court Judge Melissa DuBose ruled in favor of the American Federation of Government Employees National Veterans Affairs Council, ordering the VA to recognize the bargaining contract that represents roughly 300,000 VA employees. In her decision, DuBose noted that an executive order issued in March 2025 by President Donald Trump allowed federal agencies that are involved in national security to terminate union contracts, including the VA, which may provide medical care to the general public during national health crises. But the VA did not cite national security concerns in ending the AFGE contract, DuBose said. Instead, the VA cited cost and an inability to terminate employees for performance issues or bad conduct as reasons for terminating the AFGE's agreement. Other than the one vague post hoc statement about national security that appears in a declaration, there is zero indication from the VA that the termination decision would have been made or implemented without the retaliatory motive, DuBose wrote. She also said some unions clearly were favored over others in the VA's decision process since the department did not terminate all agreements and the termination did not follow the executive order, which allowed decisions on an agency or subdivision basis and not union by union. The VA ended most of its collective bargaining contracts with federal unions last August, affecting thousands of employees represented by AFGE, the AFL-CIO, the National Association of Government Employees, the National Federation of Federal Employees, the National Nurses Organizing Committee, National Nurses United, and the Service Employees International Union. VA officials said the move would make it easier to promote high-performing employees and hold poor performers accountable. Too often, unions that represent VA employees fight against the best interests of veterans while protecting and rewarding bad workers, VA Secretary Doug Collins said at the time. We're making sure VA resources and employees are singularly focused on the job we were sent here to do, providing top-notch care and service to those who wore the uniform. AFGE filed a lawsuit in November over the termination, which included the VA stopping the withholding of union dues from employees' paychecks. In their suit, AFGE officials said the move was harming employees and the union, with employees seeing a decline in benefits, such as a decrease in parental leave from 16 to 12 weeks and a loss of safeguards while the union's been losing members. AFGE National President Everett Kelly said Friday that DuBose's ruling holds the VA accountable. He added that the AFGE will monitor the VA to make sure it complies with the decision. Secretary Collins singled out AFGE and our members for retaliation because we refused to stay silent about cuts and changes at the VA that would harm veterans. His decision to exempt other unions from the president's executive order and then terminate AFGE and VAC's collective bargaining agreement made the retaliation impossible to deny, Kelly said in a statement. It's not clear how long the reinstatement will last. The VA did not respond by publication to a request for comment, but the department is likely to appeal the decision. The outcome is uncertain. In a separate lawsuit filed by AFGE on the behalf of all government employees, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled last month that the administration's termination of collective bargaining agreements was not retaliatory, and it overturned a preliminary injunction put in place by a different federal judge. Before the start of the second Trump administration, the VA had about 450,000 employees, nearly 80% of whom were represented by a union. VA employee unions that were allowed to keep operating following the executive order included those representing 4,000 VA police officers, firefighters, and security guards. And that judge orders VA to reinstate contract with employee union. Next, we have an item from the 12th of March. Lawmakers seek coverage for expedited fertility care under PACT Act. This by Patricia Keim. Lawmakers have introduced bipartisan legislation in Congress that would fast-track medical care for veterans with infertility linked to hazardous exposures while serving overseas. Representative Kelly Morrison, an OBGYN and Minnesota Democrat, has teamed with Representative Jay Obernolte, Republican of California, on a bill that would make infertility a presumptive condition under the PACT Act. The 2022 legislation that expanded health care and disability benefits for post-9/11 veterans and other service members exposed to toxic substances, including burn pits. The Warrior Infertility Act would speed coverage for in vitro fertilization and other fertility treatments without requiring veterans to prove their infertility was directly tied to military service. For veterans like Jenna Schmidtke, a former Army sergeant and medic, the change would shave months, if not years, off the claims process. Schmidtke, who deployed to Iraq in 2007, developed a disease tied to burn pits that led to infertility, and she filed a claim under the PACT Act. But the 13-month process to receive approval stole precious time from her reproductive years, said Schmidtke, now 39. It's not just a battle wound, it's like a wound of your soul, your very being, Schmidtke said during an interview with Military Times. It's something we can address and we can take care of our women veterans now. According to a 2018 survey by the Service Women's Action Network, 37% of active duty women faced chronic problems while trying to conceive or carry a pregnancy to term, while 30% experienced infertility while trying to get pregnant. The infertility rate of military women is more than twice the civilian rate, according to the group. The Department of Veterans Affairs has covered assistive reproductive technologies, including IVF and adoption fees for combat-injured veterans, since 2016. But proving their infertility is the result of a service-connected condition, other than a severe injury, remains a challenge, according to Morrison. Access and coverage of IVF continues to be out of reach for far too many veterans, Morrison said in a statement Thursday. Recognizing infertility as a service-connected condition will ensure that our veterans do not fall through the cracks. Roughly 43% of the 930,000 women veterans enrolled in VA healthcare are of reproductive age. Morrison's office did not say how many veterans would be eligible under the bill, but added that it would apply to eligible male veterans as well. This bill is supported by several military and veterans advocacy organizations, including the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Military Officers Association of America, Disabled American Veterans, and the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. It also has the support of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. Including infertility as a presumptive condition under the PACT Act will ensure our nation's veterans exposed to a wide range of toxins during military service receive the care and benefits they have earned and deserve, TAPS president and founder Bonnie Carroll said. And that's Lawmakers Seek Coverage for Expedited Fertility Care Under PACT Act. Next, again by Patricia Keim, VA's review of disability claims for fraud won't include past filings, officials say. This from the 17th of March. The Department of Veterans Affairs is developing a tool that will analyze veterans' disability claims applications for fraud. A program VA officials say could identify providers or companies that abuse the system. The tool will not, however, be used to pursue potentially fraudulent past claims, a concern that arose recently among veterans following a congressional hearing that divulged the program's development. Using a Microsoft Data and Analytics program, the VA program will use information gleaned from forms known as Disability Benefits Questionnaires to identify patterns in language or omissions that could indicate fraud. VA Press Secretary Pete Kasparowicz said the effort, expected to be rolled out sometime this year, is designed to detect filings from companies that pose as legitimate medical providers or file claims on behalf of veterans and charge them excessive fees. The number of for-profit companies that assist veterans with disability claims has skyrocketed since 2006, when criminal penalties were removed for those who charge veterans for the service. The PACT Act, the landmark legislation that expanded disability benefits to millions of veterans exposed to burn pits and other pollutants, also has presented these companies with business expansion opportunities. While these companies market themselves as helping veterans navigate the challenging VA claims process and get appropriate disability ratings, veterans advocates say the businesses, which they refer to as claim sharks, prey on veterans and charge them exorbitant fees. While veterans are permitted to hire companies or attorneys to appeal claims decisions, the law prohibits anyone from charging for assistance with initial filings. But that hasn't stopped for-profit companies from stepping in, and while some may offer legitimate services, others have been targeted by the VA as bad actors. In December, the department sent cease and desist letters to 40 companies, and it will use the Power Business Intelligence Program to look for fraud. The program relies on manual data entry and analysis to help identify patterns that may help VA identify when organized fraud rings are posing as legitimate medical providers and preying on veterans, for example, by excessively charging them, Gasparowitz said in an email to Military Times. In 2024, the VA Office of Inspector General said of nearly 32,000 claims completed in 2022, 69% contained one or more indicators of potential fraud risk, with an estimated monetary value of $390 million. Given the amount of money, it's no wonder the VA is being proactive in investigating disability compensation claims, said David Pineda, an Army veteran who runs a company that helps veterans with claims. In education, there were diploma mills where people were using GI benefits to go to schools. These mills were unethical and illegal, and the VA cracked down on it. In this space here, it's a similar thing happening. Some organizations are DBQ mills, Pineda said in an interview. During the traditional claims application process, a VA compensation and pension examiner completes a veteran's DBQ and assesses a veteran's medical records, physical abilities, medications, and daily activities. The review determines a veteran's disability rating, which sets the level of benefits and disability compensation. This claims process can be navigated without cost to the veteran, with assistance provided by accredited veteran service officers at veterans organizations like the American Legion and Veterans of Foreign Wars, through veteran service officers at state and county governments, and at the VA. For-profit companies can assist veterans for appeals, but some companies unlawfully are charging for initial assistance and in other cases are charging enormous fees on backdated benefits awards. One Army veteran who spoke to Military Times said Trajector Medical, one of the companies on the VA cease and desist list, provided little assistance and, after he canceled his contract, charged him thousands. The new program is designed to look at discrepancies in DBQs identified by the VA Inspector General, such as signs of alterations, incorrect contact information, information from a medical examiner more than 100 miles from a veteran's address, or contradicting findings that may indicate fraud. James Smith, Deputy Executive Director of the VA's Policy and Procedures for Compensation Service Office, said in a February congressional hearing that to develop the program, the VA would scan DBQs back to 2010, which would give it the data and patterns needed to identify future problems. But a story on Smith's disclosure in Stars and Stripes generated concerns among veterans that the tool would be used to identify fraudulent claims filed in the past 16 years. When veterans hear that the VA is scanning private DBQs for fraud, the community at large interprets this as, "They're coming after me." whether they've committed fraud or not, said Clayton Sims, a Marine Corps veteran who created a YouTube channel, The Civ Div, to discuss veterans' issues. VA Press Secretary Peter Kasparowicz said Monday that this is not the case. The VA is only using older claims to analyze patterns that could indicate fraud and are using that analysis to look at new claims, he said. Those older claims won't be reopened or reprocessed, Kasparowicz said. No veteran's claim or benefit will be reduced or denied because of this effort. In its January 2024 report, the Inspector General made 5 recommendations to the department for improved training and reporting processes and authenticating DBQs, including developing a system for identifying inauthentic or potentially fraudulent questionnaires. A bill is under consideration in Congress that would require the VA to identify and report instances of fraud in DBQs. The legislation would require the VA to establish a process for veterans and claims processors to report suspected fraud. VA officials said in the February hearing that the legislation would be a duplication of efforts. VA's been proactive in this space, Smith said. We recognize that there are some problem players out there, but we've developed training that the claims processors are required to take so that they can understand their responsibility to potentially identify fraudulent DBQs, as well as a defined process for them to report suspected fraudulent DBQs up. And that's VA's review of disability claims for fraud won't include past filings, officials say. Next, we turn to Stripes.com, which is the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper. This article is by Linda F. Hershey from the 18th of March. Lawmakers consider more than 24 bills to modernize and expand VA programs. Washington. A whopping 27 bills for reauthorizing specific veterans programs and policies were presented Wednesday at an unusual hearing of the House Veterans Affairs Committee that focused on eventually combining many of the initiatives into a single omnibus package for a vote in Congress. The bills spanned improving health care access, government accountability, and benefits for education and workforce readiness. Several pieces of legislation focused on efforts to update infrastructure, operations, and processes at the Department of Veterans Affairs, affecting how medical facilities are managed, how quickly new drugs are made available, and how research is prioritized on veterans' health. These bills aim to address ongoing issues that have hindered VA health care delivery over the years due to excessive bureaucracy and cumbersome processes, which has shifted the focus away from placing veterans at the center of everything VA does, said Representative Mike Bost, Republican of Illinois, the committee chairman, at the start of the 2-hour hearing. Some statutes and policies have not been meaningfully updated for 30 years, Bost said. When programs fall short, it is the duty of this committee to ask questions, demand answers, and make the legislative changes to fix the problems. Reauthorization is not a procedural exercise. It's how Congress evaluates whether programs are working as intended, he said. The bills included 12 Republican-led and 15 Democrat-led pieces of legislation. Bills would align the VA's National Drug Formulary with healthcare industry standards, update the VA's leasing and construction practices, and reform process for issuing contracts and making procurement. Other bills sought to establish or significantly broaden veterans' access to specific health programs. They included an initiative to expand dental coverage to more veterans and, for the first time, provide VA mental health care to incarcerated veterans with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, and other service-connected conditions. VA officials said they do not support the Dental Care for Veterans Act, led by Representative Julia Brownlee, Democrat of California. The agency has a significant concern about costs to implement the bill, said Philip Christie, a principal executive director and chief acquisition officer at the VA. Of the approximately 9 million veterans enrolled in VA healthcare, only about 2.4 million currently qualify for coverage for dental services, he said. VA anticipates that there would be a large initial surge in demand for dental care, Christie said in written and oral testimony. The Get Justice Involved Veterans Back Home Act, which is still in draft form, would direct the VA to furnish mental health services to veterans in prison with services that include telehealth, mobile care units, and other means, said Representative Herb Conaway, Democrat of New Jersey, a physician and Air Force veteran. Veterans with serious mental health problems have a higher incarceration rate, Conaway said. The bill also would ensure resumption of disability benefits upon release. Representative Mark Takano of California, the top Democrat on the committee, spoke in support of the Ensuring Veterans Smooth Transition Act, or the EVEST Act. The bill would automatically enroll in VA healthcare eligible service members leaving the military. Veterans earned this care through service to this nation, Takano said. For us to gatekeep their access to that care does nothing to improve their outcomes. We know that the months following transition can be stressful and risk factors are elevated, including for mental health, Takano said. 6 out of 10 veterans who died by suicide in 2023 were not receiving VA health care in the year before their death, according to the most recent National Veterans Suicide Prevention Annual Report. The VISN Reform Act would change how the VA runs its regional health networks, known as VISNs, which oversee hospitals and clinics that care for millions of veterans. The bill would reduce the number of networks from 18 to 8, creating a new map with much larger regions. Supporters argued that consolidation would streamline authority. The VA National Formulary Act would update VA management of prescribed medications, including how quickly it evaluates new drugs and makes them available to veterans. The VA Research Reform Act aims to update research practices and standards by creating a centralized database and prioritizing studies for enhancing health outcomes. The bill requires veteran impact forecasts to ensure that clinical studies focus on improving veteran health. The VA Funding and Workforce Protection Act, led by Representative Tim Kennedy, Democrat of New York, would help shield the VA workforce from layoffs. The bill would add protections for the 30% of VA staff who are military veterans. Takano also discussed the Toxic Exposure Advisory Committee Establishment Act, which is still in draft form. The bill would help to advance the intent of the PACT Act, which provides the health care and disability compensation to veterans with diseases and chronic illnesses linked to toxic exposures from military service, Takano said. The legislation would establish an advisory committee to guide the VA on further assisting toxic exposed veterans, identified toxins span burn pits, radiation, herbicides, including Agent Orange, and other hazardous materials. Task force members would include veterans as stakeholders. This advisory committee would create a venue for veterans to be heard and require their ideas to be taken seriously, Takano said. And that's lawmakers consider more than 24 bills to modernize and expand VA programs. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. You can listen to Weekly Reveille either as it streams or at a time of your choosing by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website, available at sunsounds.org, or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app. That's available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or from the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show. We'll turn now to the Military Officer Magazine for spring. And in their retirement guide, they have this very informative article, certainly appropriate to people like myself who are aging. Essentials for aging in place, items seniors should have or remove in their homes. This is by Anna Durrani. From cluttered walkways to throw rugs that become tripping hazards, a familiar home can bring unexpected risks as we age. Getting older often means having to rethink our living spaces, with falls sending millions of older adults to the emergency room each year, reevaluating what to keep and what to remove in your home environment is essential to protect your safety, independence, and quality of life. Aging can bring on physical changes such as reduced balance, vision, or mobility, which increase the risk of accidents and falls, said Nicole Brackett, a U.S. Army Reserve veteran and Director of Quality and Care Delivery at HomeWatch Caregivers. For adults age 65 and older, falls are the leading cause of injury. That amounts to 1 in 4 older adults falling each year, according to data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Homes that felt perfectly safe for decades can quietly become obstacle courses, said Mary Kay Busey, co-executive director of the National Association of Senior and Specialty Move Managers. The difference between thriving at home and struggling often comes down to small, thoughtful changes. A majority, 75% of adults ages 50 and older, want to stay in their own homes as they get older, according to an AARP report. Proactive planning now can help minimize accidents or emergencies before they happen and promotes peace of mind for both the seniors and their loved ones, Brackett said. Safety additions. Your home should be a sanctuary, so make sure it's a safe one. In the military, preparation and attention to detail are critical, said Cassandra Bennett, a U.S. Army veteran and owner of Come for Care Home Care, which provides home care services. Safety isn't about restriction, it's about empowerment. Taking a few simple steps from improving lighting to removing trip hazards can prevent falls and help seniors maintain safety, confidence, and independence, she said. Grab bars. Installing grab bars in your home can improve stability when getting around your home, and especially when entering or exiting showers or using the toilet. Strategically placed grab bars aren't signs of weakness, they're tools for confidence, Busey said. Install them beside toilets, in showers and tubs, along stairways, and in any area where balance might be tested. Choose models that can support full body weight. Brackett especially advises installing sturdy handrails on both sides of stairways to provide support and reduce the chance of slips or falls. To ensure better stability, make sure grab bars are screwed in and not suction cup, said Dana Wilkie, a certified aging-in-place specialist and owner and founder of Home and Able, LLC. Walk-in or curb-free shower. Showers are a danger zone for nasty slips and falls. Stepping over high tub edge becomes increasingly risky with age, Busey said. A walk-in shower with a built-in seat and handheld shower head makes bathing safer, easier, and more dignified. This single upgrade often provides the greatest impact on daily safety. Mitzi Beach, an interior designer, 50-plus lifestyle specialist and founder of Life Sizing, says she knows an active, early 60-year-old who tripped over the tile curb of her very high-end bathroom shower while getting in. After months of unsuccessful physical therapy, she endured a life-changing knee replacement, all from a healthy woman tripping in her own bathroom, Beach said. Lever-style door handles. Upgraded lever-style door handles are a must for those with limited hand strength. These can be easier to grip than traditional knobs, especially for those with arthritis, Brackett said. Lever handles just require a gentle push and no twisting, no struggling, no frustration, Bussy added. Non-slip flooring or mats. Non-slip flooring or mats can reduce the risk of falling in kitchens, bathrooms, and other spaces. Good anti-slip rubber-backed bath mats, both in and out of the shower, are critical for safety, Wilkie said. Brackett suggests applying non-slip strips in showers, tubs, and kitchens where surfaces might get wet. She also said to select slip-resistant mats instead of rugs. Flooring should feel secure with every step. Replace slippery tile in bathrooms and kitchens with textured alternatives, Busey said. If hardwood floors are too slick, consider area rugs with non-slip backing. Motion-activated nightlights. Forget clap-on, clap-off lights. Illuminate your home for better navigation. Lots of inexpensive, rechargeable lighting options are out there, Wilkie said. Add light anywhere you do your daily tasks, above the kitchen sink, under the cabinets, in the bathroom, in your closet, at your desk. Increase lighting in hallways, staircases, and entryways, or anywhere it is poorly lit. You can also use motion sensor lights to illuminate paths at night, Brackett said. Having bright, even lighting can transform safety. Motion sensor lights and nightlights eliminate fumbling for switches in the dark and provide automatic guidance during nighttime trips to the bathroom, Busey said. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors provide critical early warnings, especially for seniors with slower responses or reduced senses. Having a professional come out to test detectors and switch batteries is crucial to a senior, so a senior is not reaching in high places or climbing on high surfaces, said Richie Drew of 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. Emergency response. Many devices can be used to improve safety in the home. Consider integrating devices such as fall detection sensors, voice-activated assistance, or emergency call systems that can help provide immediate assistance in case of an accident, Brackett said. Aging adults can also wear a life alert button or smartwatch with fall detection that connects to emergency response or family members. This safety net provides reassurance for both the resident and their loved ones, Busey said. Convenience and accessibility. As people age, their physical abilities such as strength, balance, vision, and mobility might decline. Adding convenience and accessibility features can help reduce strain and prevent accidents, but also allow older adults to move around comfortably without assistance. Aging in a well-arranged, personalized environment promotes emotional well-being, reduces social isolation, and encourages continued engagement in community and hobbies, said Sandy Markwood, a national advocate for aging issues and CEO of U.S. Aging. Smart tech. Smart home technology is a game changer for older adults and can add instant convenience. Voice-activated lights, thermostats, and door locks can eliminate the need to move through dark rooms or struggle with physical controls, Busey said. Older adults can also add smart tech security systems with multiple cameras and video doorbells. Security systems can have video so that knocks on the front door can be investigated without having to open the door, said Kurt Clayson, who is a Coast Guard veteran, certified aging-in-place specialist, and owner of Clayson Remodeling Company. Family members and friends can also remotely monitor the house to ensure their loved ones are safe. Don't want to leave your cozy warm bed to raise the heat? Install a smart thermostat. For some seniors, medications may make them feel colder or warmer throughout the day. Smart thermostats can be programmed to cool or heat areas of the home at specific times, Drew said. Smart features can also extend to the bathroom space. Smart shower features include a rainhead shower fixture with a handheld shower sprayer and attached grab bars by a shower seat, Beach said. Kitchen space. The kitchen is the heart of the home and one of its most frequently used spaces. Below-counter kitchen drawers are super smart versus upper cabinets, Beach said. Below-counter doored cabinets, even with pullouts, require constant bending, which is why drawers are ergonomically superior for storage. Appliance drawers are a new must-have to avoid straining and help bring items closer. Major new options are quickly becoming the kitchen darlings, like microwave drawers, dishwasher drawers, and refrigerator and freezer drawers, Beach said. Reorganizing so frequently used items sit between waist and shoulder height is also helpful. This eliminates dangerous reaching and bending. Consider pull-down shelving systems, lazy Susans, and corner cabinets, or drawer organizers that bring items forward, Busey said. Mobility-friendly design. For those considering redesigning their homes, Brackett recommends widening doorways, lowering countertops, or adding ramps. The minimum space should be is 32 inches to allow a wheelchair to fit through, Clayson said. If budget is not a concern, there are several new elevators that are pneumatic that don't need a lot of infrastructure to install, he added. Setting your home up for one-level living, if possible, can be helpful too. Think about where a bedroom may go on the first floor and consider upgrading a first-floor bathroom to a full bath, Wilkie said. Also, take a look at your furniture placement and whether it allows for easy navigation throughout the home. Select the right pieces of furniture, too. Chairs and couches should have firm cushions and strong arms that make sitting down and standing up easier, Busey said. Avoid low, soft furniture that's difficult to rise from. Consider lift chairs for those who need extra assistance. Remove or replace. It's also important to take inventory of your home's small hazards and tackle them before they become big problems. Cluttered walkways. Walk with a family member through your home and view it through a safety lens, removing any trip hazards, including legs of chairs or tables, clutter, electrical cords across pathways, etc., Wilkie said. Cords should be secured along walls with cord covers or replaced with cordless alternatives for lamps and devices, Busey said. Remove loose throw rugs and replace them with low-pile, non-slip options or secure them with tape. Clear cluttered hallways or crowded furniture to create wider paths, particularly for older adults who use walkers, experts say. Keeping spaces open and well-organized can greatly reduce fall risk, Brackett said. If your home has excessive decorative items, it's time to toss those. Piles of throw pillows, stacks of blankets, and floor decorations create both visual clutter and physical obstacles. Simplify to what's truly used and loved, keeping surfaces and pathways clear, Busey said. Insufficient lighting. Poorly lit areas can lead to accidents. Experts advise upgrading to brighter LED lighting. Dark corners, shadowy hallways, and dim rooms all increase fall risk and create anxiety. Add floor lamps, LED light strips, or additional overhead fixtures whenever visibility is compromised, Busey said. Light up outdoor areas, too, such as the front door and garage, and clear any clutter. Clayson advises removing front steps and, if possible, to grade in a ramp. Step stools. Climbing on a stool to reach things can create a high fall risk. Move items from high shelves or cabinets to lower, more accessible locations to eliminate the need for reaching or climbing, Brackett said. Instead, invest in a reacher or grabber tool to get hard-to-reach items, to retrieve smaller items from the floor, avoiding the need to bend down and risk a fall, Wilkie said. Unstable furniture. Get rid of wobbly chairs or smaller tables that can tip over, and replace them with sturdy furniture with rounded corners. People naturally reach out to steady themselves, Busey said. Furniture that rocks, tips, or shifts under pressure is dangerous. Replace it with sturdy, stable alternatives or secure pieces to walls where appropriate. Now that those items are out of the way, the next step is deciding what to do with them. Make charity donations, do garage sales, or family giving are ways to downsize items, Beach said. Experts say making these small adjustments today can prevent major injuries later. Consulting a professional for personalized safety assessments is a smart first step. The goal is simple. Remove what creates risk, add what provides support, and create space for life to continue with confidence. That article, Essentials for Aging in Place. Well, let's move on to the Veterans Administration and their Veterans News website, news.va.gov. And our first article is from the 18th of March, Women Veterans Leading Change at VA. And this is by Messina Chalos, the Communications Manager, Center for Women Veterans. She served, she leads, she listens. During Women's History Month, we honor those women who served our nation in uniform and who are also shaping the future of veterans' healthcare and policy. At VA, women veteran leaders are not symbolic voices. They are institutional leaders who bring lived experience, military culture, and a deep understanding of our sister veterans directly into the rooms where decisions are made. This week, we honor Dr. Karen L. Brazil, DSL, PMP, and Senior Advisor to the Secretary. Life in military service. Brazil enlisted in the Army in 1984 and served 4 years as MOS 76V Materiel Storage and Handling Specialist. She later reclassified to 76Y Unit Supply Specialist, serving in a forward support unit where deployment readiness was constant and accountability was absolute. From the beginning, performance and discipline were central to her service, and she was promoted to Sergeant E5 within 2 years. Achieving the rank in that time frame reflected her focus, competence, and ability to achieve consistent results. Serving as a young enlisted woman in the mid-1980s presented challenges different from those faced today. Formal sexual harassment policies were not institutionalized as they are now, and women often navigated environments where inappropriate conduct, coercion, and unprofessional behavior were normalized or dismissed. Many endured mental pressures and, in some cases, physical intimidation. Early in her service, Brazil resolved that she would not compromise her integrity in response to pressure, promises, or coercion. What she witnessed shaped her enduring commitment to advocate for accountability, dignity in leadership, and support for those who felt unable to stand alone. Service in a forward support unit meant the possibility of deployment at any time. When she became a mother, the responsibility of readiness became deeply personal. Under the Non-Combatant Evacuation Operations, or NEO, plan, her child would have been turned over to a designated provider for hoped-for safe transport back to family. After 4 years of active duty, she made the decision to transition from the Army to focus on her family while continuing to serve in new and evolving ways. Education and reinvention. As she prepared to transition from military service, Brazil balanced motherhood with determination to build her next chapter with purpose. She used her Veterans Educational Assistance Program, or VEAP, benefits to earn an associate's degree in data processing. Her subsequent academic achievements came while working full-time and supporting her family, both a professional and a military spouse. She went on to earn a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science, a Master of Arts in Organizational Management, and a Doctorate in Strategic Leadership. Leadership at VA. Today, Brazil serves in a senior leadership role at VA, focusing on modernization, systems improvement, and strengthening services for veterans, particularly women veterans. According to Brazil, leadership must protect dignity, promote accountability, encourage transparency, and ensure voices are heard. She knows that representation in leadership matters. When women veterans help shape policy, decision-making becomes more inclusive, equitable, and sustainable. Women veterans represent the fastest-growing segment of the veteran population, yet many remain unenrolled or disengaged from VA services. Brazil's mission is clear: bring to women veterans safe, equitable, and responsive systems built with their voices at the table. Looking ahead, Brazil is focused on expanding outreach to women veterans and modernizing systems to reduce barriers, ensuring sustainable, inclusive models of care. For her, service doesn't end when the uniform comes off. It evolves. Leading the change. This year's Women's History Month theme is She Served, She Leads, She Listens. Through Brazil's leadership, women veterans have a voice at VA, not just symbolically, but structurally, so that women veterans can actively shape what comes next. It's never too late to take advantage of the benefits and services you've earned. VA is committed to empowering all veterans by highlighting the choices available to them and the comprehensive range of benefits and services they can access by choosing VA. Learn more and enroll at www.choosevasteveterans.org. www.va.gov. And that's Women Veterans Leading Change at VA. Next, from news.va.gov, we have a message from Paul Lawrence, the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. What's different this time? Why VA is confident in and accelerating deployments of the federal EHR. This is from the 17th of March. For years, skepticism has surrounded VA's deployment of the Federal Electronic Health Record, or EHR. The deployment started during President Trump's first term and since then have stopped, restarted, paused, reset, restarted, again, and now, with the right leadership in place, have accelerated. Doubters on Capitol Hill and the press, from the Government Accountability Office and from the Office of the Inspector General, have questioned all aspects of the project, from its scope, budget, and timeline to its technology, leadership, and partners. It's hardly surprising that many want to know what's different this time. One notable difference from previous deployments is the intentional and committed leadership across the program. From his first days at VA, Secretary Collins has championed the program and emphasized that we can and will implement the federal EHR. He directed VA leaders to develop a comprehensive strategic plan to accelerate EHR deployments across the remaining VA medical centers as soon as 2031. He told leaders to adopt a standard baseline EHR to limit local customizations and facilitate accountability. And he replaced the cumbersome, bureaucratic, multi-council decision-making model with a single governance council model that's already streamlining decisions in preparation for EHR deployments. Secretary Collins also established accountability for the program and assigned it to me. I therefore hold multiple meetings daily with senior VA officials responsible for the program, as well as leaders from Oracle Health and other vendor partners to address issues and make decisions that drive actions. I have also added senior advisors to strengthen support in key areas of the transformation, including change and program management, operations, informatics, communication, field adoption, software development, and most recently, benefits realization. Everyone can be certain, this time, that our leaders are focused, engaged, and owning it. Another difference this time is the level of engagement with local leadership at individual sites. In the last year, I visited 12 of the 13 deployment sites with plans to visit the final site next month. I've also visited sites in Michigan and Ohio twice. These are not photo ops. When I visit these sites, I engage in candid discussions and intense dialogue to elicit direct feedback that results in actionable change. For example, I speak with the executive leadership teams responsible for running the hospitals and overseeing deployment and change management. I engage consultants to review the schedule, assess our progress, and identify areas for improvement. I also meet with super users to ensure they receive adequate training and hands-on learning opportunities. Finally, I consult with the chief of staff to confirm that I've not overlooked any important details. In total, I've talked to more than 400 individuals, listened to their insights, and considered their suggestions. This time, everyone is dialed in, and it's influencing how we drive our deployments. Strong leadership is the key to any successful project, as is efficient, effective technology. The federal EHR is currently live at 6 VA sites, serving more than 13,000 users who have provided health care to over 188,000 veterans. The system is operated and maintained by Oracle Health, and we have strict service-level agreements for its performance, benchmarks that we closely monitor and enforce. Oracle Health has improved system performance, reliability, and usability, including operating at 100% outage-free for 27 of the last 31 months, June 23 through December 2025, with 100% attainment of ticket management targets for 30 consecutive months, July 2023 to December 2025, and 100% attainment of incident-free time for nearly 2 years straight, from March of 24 to December of 25. The federal EHR is now reliably available to end users with no system-wide outages. We've reduced disruptions, prevented lost productivity, and ensured critical workflows continue without delay. The bottom line is that, this time, the federal EHR is working, stable, and reliable. Secretary Collins and I are determined to deliver on President Trump's promise to deploy a single, accessible, electronic health record that captures veterans' medical history from the moment they swear their initial oath to the very last time they receive care. Veterans will spend less time undergoing repeat tests, imaging, and exams because results and reports from the Department of War and community health care providers will already be in the system. This increased record visibility will also increase patient safety. And since the federal EHR will be fully integrated between the Department of War and VA healthcare systems, its deployment will feel seamless to veterans. The only thing they'll notice is that their doctors and nurses have more time for meaningful conversations with them. This long-awaited, long-doubted healthcare transformation is finally happening. Check hashtag EHRM happens. Join us and have confidence in the 13 sites going live in 2026. Together, we will usher in a new era of VA care, safeguarding the health of our nation's veterans for years to come. For more information and resources, you can visit the EHRM website, which is available at www.ehrm.va.gov. And that was a message from Paul Lawrence, the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. What's different this time? Why VA is confident in and accelerating deployments of the federal EHR. You've been listening to Weekly Reveille for Thursday, the 18th of March, with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, either as it streams or at a time of your choosing, by going to sunsounds.org, the Sun Sounds of Arizona website. Or you can download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, and that's available for your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store, or from the Apple App Store for your iPad or iPhone. And you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show.